felt compelled to return to the spot across the street again and again, until her death 3 years before. It had seemed almost serendipitous when I had accepted the position at Stornoway Hospital following medical school, almost as if my mother had planned it all along. My gaze settled on the far wall, on a bas-relief depicting a recurring motif of St. George slaying the dragon, which I'd noticed throughout the building since I'd begun working at the hospital nearly a year before. My eyelids fluttered closed for a moment, watching the scene against the dark backdrop of my lids, imagining I could see the saint and the dragon stepping from the wall and writhing on the tiled floor in their perpetual battle. I forced my eyes open, if only to assure myself that the stone adversaries were still stationary. Holding onto the banister, I pulled myself to stand. I was so very, very tired. It was my second double shift in a row, and I doubted it would be my last. The city's hospitals were being flooded with the arrival of wounded soldiers from the recent invasion of the French coast. With our ranks already spread thin by doctors enlisting and heading overseas, those remaining were working hours rarely seen past medical school. The blare of an approaching siren helped me to stand up straighter, to compose myself before any of the nurses could find me in such mental disarray. As the only female doctor on staff, it was hard enough maintaining the persona of a woman with no feelings or personal needs in front of the male doctors. It was nearly impossible in front of the nurses. If they'd asked me why I'd become a doctor, I would have told them. But they didn't ask. They seemed to be of like minds when it came to me. I was a doctor because I thought I was too good to be a nurse. There were a few who were deferential to my status of doctor regardless of my gender. But the rest were too traditional, having worked hard to come up the ranks in nursing, to consider me to be any more than an upstart. I almost laughed at the thought, recalling all the bedpans I'd changed and sutures I'd sewn due to the abysmal shortage of healthcare workers. But the laugh died in my throat when I realized the siren was getting louder, as if it was headed in my direction. I inwardly cursed the blackout curtains and painted windows that obscured all views from inside the hospital with the same effectiveness as blacking out the city's skyline from potential attackers. Fully awake now, I ran down the spiral staircase, past elegant rooms retrofitted into surgical theaters, a laboratory, and a convalescence dormitory brimming at full capacity, my white coat flapping against my bare legs. It had been years since I'd had a good pair of nylons, but I'd seen too much of war to mourn their absence. I was the first one to reach the foyer, grabbing a flashlight on the hall table and flipping it on. The inner doors to the vestibule were temporarily affixed to the wall, requiring only a swift pull on the outer doors to access the outside. A strong gust of rain knocked into me, effectively soaking me and plastering my coat and dress to my body. I ran down the slippery stone steps toward the ambulance as it pulled to the curb, its headlights with the tops half painted black, its flashing lights extinguished. The driver, a large man with sad eyes peering out from beneath the brim of his dripping hat, stepped out of the ambulance. "Wait," I said, blocking his path, having to shout to be heard over the din of the rain as it hammered the ambulance in streets. "We have no more room. We even have patients on cots in the dining room. We are beyond capacity."
"Just following orders, ma'am. We got an officer here right off the boat who's in pretty bad shape. They told me to bring him here."
"But..." The man walked past me as if I were a small, yipping dog, just as Dr. Howard Greeley walked calmly down the stairs with an umbrella and approached the back of the ambulance. His bug eyes raked over me, taking in my sodden appearance and clothes, which had melded to my body. He didn't offer shelter under his umbrella. With a quick shake of disapproval, he turned to the driver.
"What do we have here?"
"Officer, sir, he's in bad shape."
"We'll find room for him."
Dr. Greeley sent me a withering look. Both men continued to ignore me as the ambulance doors were thrown open by an orderly, allowing us to peer inside to where a form lay huddled beneath a blanket.